You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hello, and welcome to Desperate. This is a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane and review ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. It's been a while since it's been on air, but we chose to revisit it as times have changed, I would say, drastically, as we've witnessed in many of these episodes.
Yeah.
But it's a nice little time capsule of the early 2000s and informed a lot of pop culture. So here we are. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan. And I'm a little sick, as you guys can tell.
A little cough.
A little bit. All good.
But we're recording virtually, so don't worry. We're not spreading the Rona around.
We're keeping it safe, folks.
So we hope that we're recording this. It's around after Christmas, before New Year's. It's that one week of the year that feels like forever and also no time at all.
Yeah, it's weird.
So you might have a lot to do. You might have nothing to do, but we hope you are staying safe as COVID has reemerged. I don't think it will ever go away.
No, it's never going anywhere at this rate.
We're both unwed women. We thought we could learn a lot from the ladies on Wisteria Lane, and boy, have we. So the way this works is we take you through what's been going on. We're currently on season two, and then we give you a recap of where we've been. We do our own Desperate Deeds to get you warmed up for where we're going. Then we do a recap of the episode that we're discussing in length today. After we're done recapping what's going on with all the ladies and all the people, we evaluated on several different scales that we find pretty fun. Today, we're recapping season 2, episode 9. It's an episode titled, That's Good, That's Bad.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, that's what this episode is about. It's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, we can take you through what's been going on this season.
Yes. So, last episode was called The Sun Won't Set. And it was actually kind of a banger. There's a lot that happened. A lot of shit went down in the last episode. I feel like every episode this season has kind of been
like
that.
Yeah, you gave it not a low score.
I gave it lower.
Fours, I think mostly. There was maybe one episode that we both marked it in the three. We rate these on a scale of 1 to 5. So 1 to 5 apples. But I gave it a higher score. I thought it was really fun. But something I did want to mention is on Instagram, I saw some sort of post that was like top 10 worst episodes. And there were like several from season 2 of the whole series.
I know. I'm telling you, maybe we're like the weird outliers and that we're actually enjoying this season. I think it's like more campy, I guess. It's just like, if you forget about the Apple Whites, which like the show seems to do every couple episodes anyway, like it is a good season. Like there's good stuff.
But yeah, what was going on last episode?
Okay, so I'll just kind of kick it off with, I'll start with Gabby. Gabby had quite an intense episode. The episode before saw her getting pushed down the stairs. The last episode showed us that, yes, she did have a miscarriage because of it.
They come in hot.
Very aggressive.
Like, women who have miscarriages, they open the whole episode. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, no, it was hardcore. And when Gabby goes to visit Carlos, she seems really unbothered. She's shopping, and he is, like, a fucking wreck. Like, they're having to sedate him because he's going
him, like,
so insane.
Or something, tranquilizer.
Yeah, they're fucking shooting him like a damn horse. He just keeps getting emotional, and Gabby's just not, and it just makes him furious. So they have to keep sedating him. So she finally goes home, and this, like, random dude shows up, played by Danny Trejo, which we talk a lot about. And he's kind of, like, hanging around the house and tells, like, Gabby that Carlos, like, hired him to, like, watch over her. And so she is, like, trying to get him to leave and tries all these tactics. And finally, she tries to bribe him. And he, for some reason, when they go to the bank to get the bribe money, she, like, lets him drive, which is very strange to me.
The strangest move of all. We never talked about that in depth. But, yes, we both agreed it was strange.
Very weird. But then, he takes her to a park, and she, like, gets out the car, takes off her heels, and guns it, which is perfect. Great job, ladies. Just so you know,
That's
absolutely, that is what you should do.
Yes.
then he, like, stops her, and he's like, why are you running? She's like, aren't you gonna murder me? And he's like, no, like, and he pulls out a balloon.
It's very cute. A big Danny Trejo with a little red balloon.
Yeah, so basically he explains that Carlos really wanted him there to help her with her grief, and he tells her, like, to talk about the baby and then let the balloon go, which is, like, releasing her grief into the air. And so Gabby does, and it's actually a very heartfelt moment where she talks about all the things that she's gonna lose and miss out on now, and she really is grieving, and I don't know, it was a very moving moment. She releases the balloon, and it was like a weird, sweet storyline. Yeah, no, it was good.
She got Housewife of the Week for that scene.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it was going to go to Lynette, and I can tell you about what happened with Lynette.
Yeah, jump right in.
Lynette fooled her husband. She didn't fool him, but she made this elaborate plan to have her kids kidnapped by Stu from her office to prove a point to Tom, which was Housewife of the Week worthy. But we feel like we always give it to Lynette lately, so we went with Gabby because she had that heartfelt monologue.
Yeah.
But that's the gist of what's going on with Lynette. Tom is not doing a great job of keeping track of all the kids. And he says that when you come home and there's three kids, then we can have a problem. But you come home and there's four every night. And I was like, what a low bar, Tom.
I know.
Like, you should be a better dad. Like, just, I have all the kids accounted for. Like
you're not going to start worrying about it until one actually disappears.
Yeah,
Got it.
He pulled the line when I was a kid. You know, I would ride on my bike for hours. My mom never knew where I was because Lynette is a bit worried when she comes home and sees her kids playing in the middle of the street in the dark. So
That's
their whole argument. And Lynette goes to work and is like, hey, Stu, can you kidnap my kids? And he goes and does it. And it's honestly one of the funniest scenes I've seen out of the two and a half seasons I've watched. He's kidnapping them, and he convinces the kids to get in the car, and so Lynette wins. She's like, fuck you, Tom.
Which is insane.
And Mrs. McCluskey comes outside and tasers him to the floor. This episode maybe was really a lesson in self-defense, because we have Gabby running away from a possible murder. We have Mrs. McCluskey out here with a taser, and that's where it all ends up with Lynette.
So, yeah, Lynette's story was fun. Maybe not as heavy as a miscarriage, but it was a good one. I'll jump into Susan. So Susan, for some reason, asked Mike to be the date to her mom's wedding, even though he's made it abundantly clear he hates her fucking guts.
I think it was, like, before the breakup, but she comes over to remind him that he RSVP'd yes.
Yeah, of course he did, and before the, like, breakup. Like,
he's like, clearly that has changed.
He's like, bitch, please. And so they start talking. Well, they don't start talking. She just keeps talking. He's trying to mind his own business, cleaning his gutters. But she starts to tell him that she's writing an autobiography about her life for some reason.
The cringiest thing I've ever seen.
Yes. And she starts talking about her dad, who apparently was a merchant marine in Hanoi. And he died. And Mike's like, well, the Merchant Marines, they don't fight. And, like, that doesn't really make any sense, but okay.
Also, how had they, were, like, engaged and they, like, never talked about what their parents did or, like, the backstory? This is the first time Mike is ever hearing about Susan's dad.
Also, really quick, though, I just want to point this out. The show kind of fucked up because I Googled Merchant Marines after our last episode. They actually died more than regular soldiers.
Oh,
yes, because they weren't armed.
Oh.
Because they're the ones, like, going into bad territory to bring the supplies.
So, obviously, if you, like, also if you bomb, like, a supply ship, you're kind of, like,
helping
your case. Like,
yeah. And it sucked because if you're a merchant marine, everyone treated you like you were a half-ass soldier, when in reality, your risks were way higher. So, you know what? That actually was a good story on Sophie's part.
Shout out to our merchant marines.
Yeah, shout out to our merchant marines. But, anyway, I just had to Google that and throw that out there. But Susan gets all confused, and so she's, like, asks her mom at the rehearsal for, again, classic Susan move, can't just let it go for a fucking week. She brings it up to her mom, and her mom gets all, like, you know, classic Susan energy. It's weird, because when she's with her mom, she doesn't act like that, but she's just, like, she's just as neurotic. But anyway, Morty steps up and gives her some weird story about a prostitute he had sex with, and then tells her that she was a product of a one-night stand. So Susan gets all freaked out, but, like, decides, you know, my mom was young, whatever, it was a mistake. So later, Sophie, pulling a Susan at her own wedding, fucking announces to everybody that Susan's, like, dad is actually just a married man who was her boss. And so Susan leaves the wedding all pissed off to look for her dad.
Some random dude at the wedding is like, oh, that guy, and, like, calls out the name of the specific dude.
Yeah, because I guess he's, like, owed some local store that everybody goes to, so I don't fucking know.
It was a moment, like, the speech started out strong, and then it just really went off the rails. Like, it just took a tight turn, and she's like, I'm a bad mother, and you're like, wait, what?
The apple does not fall far from the tree.
No, that is what we learned. Yeah, and last but never least, really always first, is Bree. And George is still here. He's being crazier than ever. Like, it takes a while, like, to know somebody. It takes a while sometimes to know somebody's really crazy. But Bree is, like, reaching that consensus.
Mm-hmm.
So she's getting, like, weird vibes. And it doesn't start there, but we'll get there. So she finds a wedding announcement in the newspaper when she's cutting coupons, which is the most housewife activity we've seen. Mm-hmm. She's clipping physical coupons. She turns it over and there's her face with George. And she's like, what the fuck? And goes to the pharmacy and is like, what the fuck? And George is like, sorry, I couldn't cancel it. And then he sees that she's not wearing her wedding ring, which becomes a big problem throughout their story. He's like, put it on. And she's like, I don't want to. Rex died 7 weeks ago. And, and he's like, put it on. And she's like, okay. And then she puts it on and she's like gardening and shit. And some lady named Layla comes over and is like, I used to be engaged to George. Like, get out. I'm trying to help you. He set my ex-boyfriend's car on fire. He's literally insane. And Bree, like, her reaction, I don't know the right word for it. I mean, she kicks Layla out. She's like, mm-hmm. I can't believe you would say that about the nicest man ever. And I'm like, you are delusional. Like, I if some lady came to my house, did a house call about a guy I was dating, I might be like, wait, like, give me some proof. Like,
mm-hmm.
I kind of believe you. I wouldn't just be like, get the fuck out. But Bree does that. Then she goes back to the pharmacy and she's like, what's up with this chick Layla? I'm a little bit worried now that I think about it.
And yeah, like, now that
he's like, she's obsessed with me, isn't it obvious? Like, George goes off that this chick is like obsessed with him and stuff, and says that she's crazy, pulls up records that are not Layla's, that are for like a bunch of like anti hallucinogenic drugs and stuff. And Bree's like, okay, but Bree has a bad feeling because she goes behind the sunglasses and takes off the ring and leaves. So then we meet Ty Grant, who is actually pretty hot. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why did you ever leave him for Rex? But he rolls up to her when she's out to dinner with George. He introduces George as a friend, and he should have saw the end coming right there. He's like, actually, we're engaged. We're not just friends. And Bree is like, Ty, do you want to dance really close and like so I can look at my friend or fiance from afar? So she goes and dances and she keeps like looking back at him. And then George gets pissed off. He gets the ring out of her purse and goes to the dance floor and is like, put this fucking ring on. And he assaults her, but then Ty doesn't beat the shit out of her. He defends her, I should say. And then George is like, I'm sorry, but we're just engaged. And Bree's like, we're not anymore. Then George goes and sets Ty Grant's car on fire, his nice little Porsche.
Yeah.
That's his
thing. We learn that George has a thing, or a kink, for car torching.
I know. So, yeah, that's where we ended up. The Applewhites, nothing happens. Matt goes on a date with Danielle. We think they meet in a park. He's wearing something other than a wife beater.
Yeah.
And Betty doesn't like that he's out after dark. They do catch Caleb. Bongo the dog apparently doesn't care if somebody's held at gunpoint, but can spot an African-American man running mm-hmm. through the streets. So I don't know how Mike trained him, but it's problematic. And then that's it. That's all we hear about anybody, because Zach and Paul are just bopping around, I guess.
Yeah, they are just bopping around. I don't even know. I don't know why they keep billing them as, like, part of the main cast because they're not
They're not really all there, and I have a feeling they might drop off eventually. It was a good episode. Jordan gave it lower ranking than I did, but
I still gave it a 4. Like, it's still up there.
I didn't say you hated it, but I gave it way too high. And now that we've talked about it, I just liked that George was full crazy finally. And I gave it a 4.75, which was way too high now that I'm looking back.
Yeah. That's how you felt. You're passionate about it.
At the time, I just really enjoyed it. Today, season 2, episode 9, That's Good, That's Bad. If you want to watch it, it's on Hulu or Amazon Prime, but you're more than welcome just to listen to us talk. And before we dive into our recap, though, we have some Desperate Deeds. We need, like, a little theme song for it.
I know. Desperate we should deeds. Make one. Yeah. Do, 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 do. Yeah. Okay. And that's it. Desperate Deeds, folks.
Yes. But I can go first. I've been dealing with lots of car trouble this past month and a half. I got rear-ended. Have I talked about being rear-ended on this podcast?
I don't think so, no.
Maybe not. I was still actually traumatized from it. But I got rear-ended the day before my birthday. Some chick was, like, swerving everywhere, going really slow. I had to slam on my brakes not to hit her. And then I got in front of her. Like, we were on an off-ramp. And I got in front of her and stopped at a stoplight on the off-ramp. And she just, like, rammed into my car. Like, her car was totaled. There was, like, fluids leaking. And so my first response was sitting in the car. And I said, what the fuck? And then I get out of my car and the chick gets out of her car and she's like out of it. And witnesses stopped too. And they were like, she must be drunk. And I was like, I couldn't even think straight. But the desperate deed here is that she was pretty fucking drunk and she was arrested. That's not desperate, but she tried to leave the scene of the accident, which is the most desperate thing.
Yeah, that was rough.
She didn't try to leave immediately. Immediately, I got her name and I wrote it down in my notes because I was, like, just trying to get her insurance information because, like, no matter what happened, I, like, needed that. And I kept asking her, I'm like, were you, like, drinking or, like, on drugs? She's like, no, but she was clearly. And, she was not all there. And then I'm like, I need your insurance. I need your church. She can't, like, get me the insurance. And I'm like, this is a fucking nightmare. Luckily, I had some guardian angels. These two people stopped and, like, waited with me the whole time. But after about, like, 30 minutes, she's, like, fiddling around in her car. Apparently, there was an open bottle in there. I don't really know. I still don't have the insurance information, but the cops have been called. The cops are coming eventually. And I think she realizes the gravity of what's going on because she called her boyfriend and I hear him on speakerphone.
Yeah.
And he's telling her, like, you're really drunk and, like, you should, like, leave the scene, I think is what he says. Because she comes to me after never giving me insurance, forgot that we even had that. Well, she said, what's going on? Did I get too close to your car? And I was like, you literally fucking rear-ended me. Yeah, yeah. You got too close. But she goes, did you call the cops? And I'm like, well, yeah, like, this is an accident. Your car is totaled. You seem to be, like, drunk. So I didn't, well, I mean, these other people called the cops. I can't undo that. She's like, please don't send me into jail. Please don't send me into jail. And I'm like, well, I personally will not be sending you to jail, but that's just how it works here. And
yeah,
you're like, the cops. I'm like, sorry, you could have killed somebody. And she goes, please don't. I'll do anything. I'll pay you any amount of money. And I'm like, that seems like an empty promise. But
yeah, you're like, how rich are you, sis?
I'm like, what is your career? And she says, yeah, I'll pay you any amount of money. And I say, I can't do anything about that. Please just let me get in my car and drive around the corner. My boyfriend will pick me up. And I look at her car and it's like so fucked. Like, I have pictures. She can't drive this car anywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, I don't think your car is drivable, but also that's like a hit and run. And she's like, please, I'll do anything. And then I'm just like, I think you should stay so that you don't get a hit and run. And yeah. Then she proceeded to go into her car and fall asleep in the driver's seat while we waited for the cops. And then her weird boyfriend came and he was even worse than her. That is my desperate deed. She was pretty desperate to be offering me any amount of money that she probably didn't have and to be trying to do a hit and run.
Yeah.
This scene. I get it. Like, your threat. Like, I get her reaction, but also super desperate, and I'm glad she didn't do a hit and run, because I think that would have been worse than the DUI that she did get.
But, oh my god, yeah, that totally would have been worse. Oh my god, this girl. Yeah,
so it was pretty bad. Yeah, she had been drinking at Universal Studios all day, so I hope it was worth
it. Look, I've been there, but
but don't drink and drive, everybody. And if you do drink and drive and get into an accident, don't do a hit and run.
Yeah, that's never a good idea.
Offer to do a hit and run, just sit and wait and just chill. So stay safe these holidays, though.
Stay safe. That's honestly the best advice you could give.
Yeah. What about you?
Wow, mine's not that interesting, but when I was 12, this is going way back.
I'm all like, recently I got it. You're like, no, I was 12.
I'm like 13 years ago, 13 long ass years ago.
Yes.
I had a crush back in the early days when crushes were so innocent.
I like this. I like the beginning of this.
And we were all at a public pool. It was like one of those, not public pool, but it was like the pool that you go to during the summer that has like the water slides and stuff like that. But it's not like a water park. It's like, yeah, it's like local. They had like this nasty. It's like, the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, just stop talking, this is so gross.
It's disgusting.
So inside they had this like zip line thing that you'd hold on to, like you ended up in the water.
That's a lit pool.
Yeah, well, I was a little weakling and this guy like was watching, so I was like, fuck. And you do it from the high dive, so you start really high. And I get up there, and I grab on, and the moment I got off the fucking, like, board, I just, like, my hands just slipped, and I fucking face planted into the water, like, hardcore. It was the most embarrassing moment. I never ended up dating that guy ever in my life, so that did not work out for me.
You spoke to him again.
It was so embarrassing. My nose started bleeding. Like, it was terrible. Because I like, belly flopped, basically, onto the water from the high dive. It was awful. That's, like, it was so painful. It was so loud. I was like, oh, my God.
I can, like, hear the sound in my head right now.
That was probably the most embarrassing, painful, and painfully embarrassing moments of my life.
Yeah, the things we do to impress, like, when we're young, too, we're like, this will really impress him.
I wish I'd learned my lesson, but I didn't. I still did stupid things.
Yeah, we never stopped, but I'm just impressed that this pool sounds way better than mine. Like, the one I'm thinking of was called Titlow Park. It was literally called Titlow Park, and it was, like, by the bay where I grew up, but it was, like, literally just a pool with, like, maybe two diving boards. But you have a zip line and like, slides. And
yeah, they had slides outside. The Osborne Aquatic Center. Okay. It was nice.
And I get the impression, like, you're like me, like, we're not really strong swimmers either.
I'm a good swimmer, but I'm not good at pools.
Okay, yeah, I'm not good at, I can swim, everybody, don't get me wrong, but I don't want people to.
I'm thinking about it though, and I'm like, I don't know if I've seen you swim.
No, I'm not a strong swimmer. I feel unconfident in water.
I'm like, I cannot confirm the fact that she's able to swim, folks. I've never seen it.
But like, I'll just like wade in the water and like hang out in the waves at the ocean.
Okay.
But I'm a bad swimmer.
No, I'm a good, we used to go whitewater rafting a lot, and there's a thing where you ride the rapids without the boat, and then you have to swim across them. And you have to be, like, my dad didn't think I could do it, and I fucking did it. I was really good at it.
Okay, I'm never going whitewater rafting then.
It's so much fun.
I'm telling you, I'm not a strong swimmer, and I was like, take lessons. And I'm like, I'm almost 30 fucking years old. Like, I'll be in 2 years, but like,
hey, I don't know. It's never too late.
Yeah, one thing I'm not doing is getting dive certified either. I'm terrified.
My boyfriend wants to do that. My mom.
You'll do it for him. I know it, but.
We want to go to. We're going to Hawaii for Christmas, fingers crossed, with everything going on in the world. And next year. And he wants to, like, scuba dive. And I'm like, I just don't know if I need to be that close to things that deep.
Just go snorkeling.
I like snorkeling.
Yeah, just I don't mind that.
Yeah.
It's more of my thing. You're just at the, you can, you're at the surface and nothing bad could happen. You don't, it's like, I've heard everybody who gets dive certified, and let me know if this is true, if you have been, like, it's stressful because you have to be thinking the whole time about, like, your levels. And
it just doesn't sound like a ton of fun, but I'm not completely closed off to it yet. We'll see.
All right. Those are our desperate deeds. We hope you're all warmed up, and we're going to go ahead and watch this episode. You can watch along, but we will be right back. Before you go, make sure that you're aptly prepared and buckle up.
Buckle up.
George stalks Bree to a breaking point. Lynette catches Nina in an uncompromising position and tries to use it to her advantage. Susan meets her father and tries to form a relationship. Carlos returns from prison a new man.
So big things are popping.
Oh yeah.
Things popped. And did we see the demise of George happening that way? I don't know. Jordan knew how it was going to go down. Did we see how Dr. Goldfein was going to come back? Jordan kept that secret. He wasn't dead.
This was difficult, you guys. This time it was hard.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the episode. But lots of other big things happened. Is Susan forcing yet another person to be a part of her life that doesn't want to be there? Yes.
Classic.
Classic. Lynette just went too far. She went in too hard to her work thing. She took it too far. So all the ladies are just, like, being the normal selves, actually. But we've really amplified the level.
They all went, like, them times 100.
Yes. This was an episode on crack.
Oh, yeah.
But we start out with a party at Bree's house with strangers we have never seen, people that she is not friends with, clearly.
Yeah, never seen them before, never ever. Seen these people. That shit was crazy.
Mary Alice Young breaks it down, saying that everyone who's ever been to a party at Bree's thought of her as the perfect hostess. She knew how to take care of her guests. Her dinners were served promptly. Liquor flowed freely. And her anecdotes were always enjoyable. And this particular night with these strangers, the perfect hostess was about to find herself in a very imperfect predicament. And we hear singing, and it can be no one other than George. And let's remember, he was the singing voice of Hercules.
Oh yeah,
he was. Didn't know the song that he was singing in this scene, but it sounded rather Disney-ish or like old,
like Broadway.
Yeah, he was doing a great job. Not enough to win her back, because she runs outside and she's in the hottest red dress, I have to say.
She looks great.
She looked great in every scene. I'm like, she got really hot, like, this season. Not that she was not, like, she was always hot, but every time I see her, I'm like, damn, like, goals.
Yeah.
But she's like, George, get the fuck away. We've talked about this. Like, what are you doing? And he says that the whole thing that's going on with them is a tiff, that they can fix it. And he is clearly on another planet. And he keeps singing, and she's like, stop it. I am not kidding. Get off my lawn. I'm going to call the police. And he's like, go ahead. If you do and they arrest me, I'm going to come right back here.
Like a crazy person.
He's stalking her. He's taking it too fucking far.
Yep.
That's on him. If somebody says they're going to call the police, leave. Her guests are kind of like, what's going on? When she comes back in and she's like, don't worry, dessert's about to be served. She goes upstairs, gets a rifle or a shotgun. I don't know the difference, but mm-hmm. a big ass gun. And she literally shoots it at him, because I guess he rented a van for this karaoke machine. And she shoots it at the van and he leaves. And yet another way, I think we're just learning conflict resolution here.
Yeah.
This is one option if you're pro gun. And it works. So Mary Alice Young says Bree knew how to take care of her guests, especially those that were not invited.
Mm-hmm.
Cha-ching. Then we go into our little intro, and we have some more Mary Alice Young talking about our theme this episode. Mm-hmm. We see some kids playing cowboys and Indians, and she says good guys wear white hats and bad guys wear black hats. This is how children distinguish between good and evil, but they soon learn that bad guys don't always look so bad. They even seem friendly until you get to know them a little bit better. And that's when we cue George. George riding by on his little blue bike, which, pay attention, that's going to come back.
I know. Pay attention, folks.
So he stops in front of Bree's car, and he's like, fancy seeing you here.
I know. I'm like, at her house?
At her house, getting into her car, and she's like, shut up. I've seen you riding back and forth for the past hour. She just calls it like she sees it. If you find yourself saying, fancy seeing you here, just stop yourself, because that phrase sucks, and you probably were meant to see them wherever. It's not really, like, but yeah, just don't. It's But, yeah, that's what's going on. She says, you've been riding up and down, and he says, I don't want to do this, but you won't return my calls. And she's like, so I'm, like, forcing you to stalk me? Like, that's plan B. And then she gets in the car, and he says that he messed up. He has issues to work on. He'll go to a therapist. He'll do whatever. How can I show you that I change? If you won't give me a second chance, you know I'm not a bad person. But Bree says, I do know that, but I'm not sure you're a good one either. And isn't that a zinger? So
yeah,
he's going to think about that for the next week.
Oh, yeah.
Should we start with Bree? Hers is pretty epic.
Maybe we should save it for last just because it is so crazy.
Yeah.
Or do you want to just do it now?
I guess we should just get it out of the way.
Okay, let's just do it.
We don't really see, this all happens at the beginning, and then we don't really see Bree until 30 minutes in again. Like, we go through all the other chicks, because Bree is, the next time we see her, we find out that Dr. Goldfine is alive. And I was so, alive and well. So excited that he didn't get murdered. And I don't regret the title of our episode, if it doesn't murder for you. It's not real, but she's visiting him. She's been thinking really long and hard about, like, this relationship with George. And he's like, what have you been up to? And she's like, hanging with friends, doing charity. Oh, and I broke up with George, which is how you that's how you start a therapy session, where you're like, yeah, things are good, except for this, like, huge problem in my life.
Yeah.
And then you dive in. But she asked, do you ever cure people, like, really crazy ones? And he's like, they either have mental health or they don't. And I really liked this mental health plug.
I liked the way he answered this, like, whole conundrum.
Yeah. He says, you either treat them as if they have any other disease and they get better, or they don't. And I was like, wow, this is pretty woke for 2006 or whatever.
I know.
And when she broke up with him, there was something in his eyes. It was malevolence. It didn't seem like something curable. And he says, I don't believe in evil. And she's like, some guy literally threw you off a fucking bridge. Like,
yeah, like, what the fuck?
He's all like, I'm cool. He just has a broken leg, it seems. It's like, he seems really fine. But
yeah, he's actually doing pretty good.
Yeah. And he's like, well, that guy didn't know anything about me. He rode up on his little blue bike and did this. Do I think he's wicked? No, he's probably just disturbed. And Bree, you see the look in her eyes, and she's like,
the realization hits.
Yes. And she's like, wait, the blue bike. And then we see that Bree has called the cops on George at this point, because George is walking home with these little bags from the pharmacy, and his house is, like, being torn apart. Like, the police are full, like, throttle, just tearing it apart. Like, and he hides in the bushes and calls Bree on his flip phone, and he leaves her a message, and it's like, what the hell is going on? The police are here. And she's wearing this little orange sweater and looks scared.
Yeah.
But she answers after he gets through a few sentences, and she says, I know what you did to my doctor. And I know that you're sick and you need to get help. And like, that's what you need. And then George doesn't really listen, and he runs away, and he's like, whatever.
He scurries like a rat.
Yeah, he tries to walk away all cool for, like, five steps, and then he runs away. But he has a bigger plan in mind, one that I don't quite understand why this is where he leapt to after he tried stalking her. I feel like he could have exhausted a few more things, but we as the viewers, maybe we're tired.
Yeah, maybe they knew that we were tired.
Yeah, George is now at a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
There's a knock at the door, and you're like, please don't be Bree in her sexy outfit that she fucked Rex in last season.
I know.
I was like, please don't. Mm-hmm. He's visited by a bellman, and he's like, there's a charity dinner downstairs. Bree Vandekamp is there. Give her this note and walk away. If she comes up the elevator, call me. And I'm like, okay, this guy is off it. I said, I don't think he's legally allowed to do that, but he agrees. Like, we both worked at hotels. I don't think it's like that chill. You're usually like, are you like related? Like, what's the deal? Can I see a credit card and an ID?
Yeah.
Like, I just need to know that you're not like stalking her. But he does it. He gets a note to Bree, who looks like a redheaded Marilyn Monroe. She's looking hot, whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be a suicide note from George. They scan it. I didn't read fast enough. Did you catch anything there?
It basically says, like, I'm going to kill myself. Like, please come up to this room is essentially what it says.
Yeah. So it gets the main message across. She ends up calling Detective Barton, I should say. The detective that was once against her and is now for her. And he says, I was just thinking about calling you. And they're searching George's house. They've uncovered evidence that suggests he's responsible for Rex's death.
Mm-hmm.
It's all coming together. Bree is regretting moving his body now to a far-off plot on the graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
She goes up, takes the elevator up. The bellman sees this and calls George. And I said, OMG, he is really killing himself. Because George is sitting there taking pills saying, she loves me not. Drinking Jack Daniel's Bad Choice to Die With. Or Captain Morgan or something. Like,
yeah, something really bummer. Like a huge bummer.
Horrible that you've had a bad hangover from. But he's killing himself so he won't be hungover. And Bree is having a come to God moment in this elevator. She's pissed. She's crying. She stops the elevator at one point. And I'm like, dang, I'm glad that she didn't go up there. But she ends up there. Because George wakes up at a certain point. He does pass out from this combination of liquor and pills. Passes out, and then he wakes up and calls the operator, and he says, I need an ambulance. And then Bree walks in, and he's like, actually, just kidding. I don't. And I'm like, this is horrible.
Also, that's just, like, not how it works. When you call 911.
It's literally fucking not. And she looks around the room and she gets the gist pretty quick that he tried to kill himself. It wasn't just fake, which I would have thought it was fake.
Yeah.
If I got some note like that. And she says, what were you thinking taking those pills? And he says that he didn't hurt the doctor. Can't believe you thought I was capable of that, which gaslighting to the extreme.
I know. I hate him.
And she's like, why are you telling me this? And he's like, maybe I don't have to die. And he's like putting it all in her hands, which don't do that. Like, your life is yours. Don't put it all on this other person. She's not that important. Like,
yeah.
He says, maybe I don't have to die. I could face the police knowing you would be there for me, knowing you'd be my friend. And I'm like, this dude can chill. Like, so much weight on Bree, and like, she doesn't even like you. She's never liked you. Like, I don't know.
He's essentially trying to hold her hostage.
Yeah. And she's like, well, we can call the ambulance, we can pump your stomach, I want to help you, but I need to forgive you, and I can't do that until you admit everything you've done. And he's like, I didn't kill the doctor. And Bree is like, you know what I'm talking about, though.
She's like, this isn't about the doctor, bitch.
Yeah, she's like, you killed Rex, but I know you're not well, so just be honest and I can forgive you. And she's very, like, school teachery about it. It'll be the hardest thing I'll ever do, but I'll do it. I'll forgive you. And George is like, just call the ambulance. I'm in trouble. And she's like, admit it and I'll call. And he's just like, I love you. And anything I might have done, I did it for you because you wanted me to.
Yeah, which was fucked. Ooh, that moment hits Bree like a truck.
And she's like, her face is disgusted.
Yeah.
Taken aback. You know you did, is what he said. You know you did. And she is like, whoa, maybe I did, but I hate you. That's what her face says. She didn't say that, but he's like, call the ambulance. Like, let's just get this thing going. And she says that she called them while he was asleep. They're already on their way. And I said, George smiles and dies, hopefully.
Yeah, because he's like at peace thinking that the ambulance is coming, but
I can't
bitch
be certain.
Bitch is savage as fuck.
I thought Dr. Goldfine died and he came back. So who knows what the hell is going to happen with George. But it seems like he died. This would be death number 5, I believe. And whew, dang, that storyline took me for a ride.
Bree was pretty hardcore.
I'm glad she did what she did. I'm honestly
I am too.
So glad.
I think he deserved it. I think he totally deserved that.
Yes. Well, I'm going to let you talk about a great comeback, almost greater than Dr. Goldfein's. I'm going to let you talk about Lynette.
Okay, so Lynette's story actually did have a pretty crazy ending in itself. So after Lynette gives a pitch to, like, Nina and Ed, Ed's, like, her boss that we never see, that we saw in, like, the first episode that she started working there and then didn't see again. But just, like, very basic white guy, too. He looks like he and Stu look the same. They look the same
so
to me.
So average. And this is, like, every boss I've ever had, like... Yeah. Higher ups are always just, like, average.
No, it's super lame. But basically, Ed's like, I don't get your pitch. And Nina just, like, kind of disrespects Lynette, as usual, in front of Ed. And then Lynette tries to get everybody else to, like, stand up to Nina. But obviously they don't, because they don't want to lose their jobs. And Lynette's like, God fucking damn it. And she's just, like, is so fucking frustrated. Later, I guess, like, maybe everybody goes home and Lynette comes back to the office for some reason to get something. And she catches Stu and Nina having sex in the office. And Nina and Lynette kind of make eye contact, which was, like, very disgusting.
That's disgusting. She's watching for way too long.
So then, and Lynette kind of gives her this, like, side eye, but I don't know how to describe it. So Lynette, the next day, talks to Nina, and she's like, I just want you to be nice to people. Like, that's it. And Nina's just like, like, oh my god, like, that's, like, such a struggle for her, I guess.
I know.
Lynette kind of feels like she's won this round. Well, then it turns out that Nina fires Stu, and she, like, fucks with all his records to make it look like he was a shitty employee, which he kind of was, but I definitely think she makes it look worse than it is.
Yeah.
So then Lynette decides she's gonna talk to Stu, because she's gotta figure out a way to get back on top, because Lynette also kind of gets threatened by Nina. Nina's like, I'm also supposed to make another round of cuts. And I'm looking for team players, basically saying, like, you're going to get fucking fired because you tried to blackmail me.
Yeah.
So Stu comes over, and basically Annette's like, if you tell Ed, like, Nina will get fired. Like, you could technically sue us, which she did not think that went through very well. The next day, Lynette comes into, like, the apocalypse at work, like, people crying and screaming and, like, freaking out. And it turns out that Stu decided to sue.
She tells him it'll be, you could get millions of dollars. And he's like, millions?
Yeah, she did not think that through. So Ed's basically like, look, he's going to file a suit. So I had to pay him off to be quiet. It cost a fuck ton of money. And now I got to cut, like, where it's necessary. And so, like, tons of people get fired, except for Lynette's like, actually, I like you, though. And you're going to stay on as Nina's job, basically. And Nina is, like, literally in the most savage fashion ever, standing by her old office with a glass of wine, not giving a fuck, watching everything go to shit.
It was key, like, peak 11 a.m. You know, it's like 10 or 11 a.m. and she has a glass of fucking wine.
Yeah, red wine too. Yes. In the morning. Yes. So Lynette, like, walks over to Nina, and she's like, I didn't want this. And Nina's like, I used to be nice. And she gives this whole ass monologue about how working for Ed, like, turned her into a monster. And she's like, good luck, sis.
Yeah.
And I was like, basically happy to go. And then she's like, say goodbye to your kids, because she's never going to see them anymore.
Yeah. And she hands her the wine. She hands Lynette the wine. But in the outro, we see that Nina is crying over losing her job.
Yeah, she is sad.
But she's going to move on to something bigger and better, because
oh, yeah.
She might have been a bitch, but it did seem like she cared about her job.
Uh-huh.
So Nina, like, ended up kind of liking her.
I did, too. But I think it was time. We'd had enough episodes of Lynette trying to placate her with, like, nothing happening. So.
Yeah, I hope this really ramps up wherever Lynette's going. But also, yeah. What a comeback for Stu. I hope he wins his settlement.
Yeah.
Hope he gets a couple mil, because there apparently were videos of him and Nina together.
Yeah.
Ed was like, there were even videos. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, Ed's like, what the fuck is happening?
If you're watching along, you see what he looks like. It's nothing to write home about.
But no, he's very basic.
Yes.
Times a million.
Before Lynette goes back to the office and sees Nina and Stu fucking, they're at a poker game, and, like, all of her friends know that Nina's an asshole too, and they're talking about it. But I'm just gonna ease us into Susan's storyline, because Susan has a big part in this poker game too. Susan is telling them, they're all aware of her dad's situation apparently. Mm-hmm. And Susan comes up with the craziest idea I've ever heard on this show, and all the women know that it's fucking crazy. I'm glad they call it out. It's insane. she is like, I'm just gonna try and like ease into getting to know my dad. I'm just gonna like go apply for a job at the store that he works at and like, you know, work there for a while and get him to love me and then tell him like, hey, I'm your daughter. And everybody's like sipping their wine and Edie's just like, that is fucking insane.
Yeah, because that's fucking weird. Susan is like, oh my God. She's like, I don't have mic drama anymore. I need something.
Yeah, and Susan doesn't even get why it's insane. It drove me up the wall. Susan's like, I don't get why it's insane. And Edie's like, because it all hinges on him responding to your personality. And like, you have to get a job there. Like, it's just so involved. Everybody's kind of just trying to be like nice about it. But they should have kicked her out of the house at that point. That is lunacy.
Yeah.
So yeah, that just had to point that out, and everybody knows it. And Edie is once again the voice of reason, because we don't have Mike to be the voice of reason lately.
Yeah, no.
So before we get to the poker game, Lynette is like scoping out the store with Julie. She has dragged Julie along in her plan, and I feel sorry for Julie because this is just a fucked up childhood at this point. They're like watching, and Julie's like, how are you gonna do it, and like tell him that you're his daughter. And Susan's like, I'm not, he abandoned me, I don't have a desire to have a relationship with him. And she's like, then why are we fucking doing this, like I have school, like I don't know. And Susan is like, I just want to see what he's like, spy him a little, like feed the curiosity. And then she goes in, and this guy is like an average geezer, is what I wrote. Average geezer, being most weird.
I would be like bummed out if I were her that my dad looked like that.
Oh my God, not a hot dad.
No.
Not, no. Just, I'd be bummed out too. I'd be like, this is where my genes come from. Like,
yeah, no.
So he says, bet I know why you're here. There's a giveaway. I have cowboy hats right here. And she's like, what? And he's like, don't worry about it. It's promotional. It doesn't cost me a dime. And he puts a hat on her. And I'm like, what kind of fucking giveaway is this? But it's okay. And then she runs back to the car and she's like, I got a hat and I have a dad and he's great. And I'm like, he doesn't seem that great, like he just seems average. But
yeah,
then she comes up with that idiotic plan, and then she tries to go through with that plan, because next time we see her, she's applying at the store, and he says she's overqualified, and she's like, I just want to change my life, always liked horses, yada yada. And Susan is smiling way too much at him, like to the point that he's creeped out.
Yeah,
like, what's up? And she's like, I'm just looking at your eyes, they're kind of like the color of mine. And he's like, did my wife send you? Tell her if the PI couldn't find anything, like you're not going to. And he like makes her leave, but while she's leaving, he's like, your tight little ass, this and that. He's like complimenting her in like too sexual of a way, because he doesn't know that he's her motherfucking dad.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I'm your daughter. Remember Sophie from the 60s? And he literally can't deal with this information. He goes to the back and has a heart attack. So
yeah, no, it's pretty crazy.
I said another suicide at first, because you don't know. And then I said, I'm like, wait, he literally died at this information.
Yeah.
Short-lived story. Just kidding, he's not dead, because we catch up with him at the hospital. And Susan is browbeating him into her life, just like she does with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So she is like, just wanted to see if you're okay. And he's like, bad heart, it's genetic, so don't want to check. Like, you might want to check on that. And then he's like, you need to, like, get out, because my wife's coming. And, yeah, she can't find out that I have another kid. And she's like, wait, well, he says, nice to meet you. And she's like, I just like kind of wanted more, that's not enough. And I'm like, Susan, you don't really get to choose, like you just don't get to choose this one. But she's not taking no for an answer. He says, I don't want to know you, I have a family, your mom and I had an understanding, I gave her a fuck ton of money and she said she would shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
basically. And Susan was like, I wasn't consulted. And it's like, yeah, no shit. Like, you're the love child. And it's not fair to punish me for a mistake. Oh, he says it's not fair to punish him for a mistake that he made years ago. And she says, you think I'm a mistake? And he's like, is that what you need to hear? Because, yeah, I fucking do. And I'm like, Susan, like, painted herself in this corner. Like,
she put herself in a position where he had to be rude. Like, she should have just taken the hint from the get. Like, this is her building up unrealistic expectations yet again on everybody around her.
I've hated her a bit more, but this is up there on how much I hate Susan. Carol, the wife, rolls in and says the kids are on their way over. And Susan should yet again take the hint that he has a whole nother family. like a real family.
She just likes to martyr herself.
No, it's true. She does. So Susan is about to tell this chick. She's like, didn't your husband tell you? And she's like, I'm his like guardian angel. I found him and called 911 and gave him CPR. And like, she goes over and kisses him on the cheek, which, sorry, if this was my husband and some chick who found him kissed him on the cheek, I'd be like, you can die and leave. Like,
yeah.
I don't care that you found him and think you're his guardian angel.
I know. I'm like, who the fuck are you,
yeah,
bitch?
Yeah, who are you? Yeah. There might be a fight in the hospital.
Yeah.
She whispers in his ear that she's, like, not going anywhere. And I think that's psychotic behavior. She is the next George because get the hint and leave.
She's getting there. Yeah,
that's where it ends for Susan. The cringe was up there.
Delusional. She's delusional.
Yeah, but someone more realistic is Gabby, so we can talk about her and a nun.
Yes. So, well, Gabby's at home one day and she gets a phone call from who she thinks is the prison, I guess.
Oh my god, this was like, I have to say, what you're about to describe is one of my favorite scenes.
So it's like a prison warden telling Gabby that Carlos like escaped prison, and she's freaking out. She's like, why would that motherfucker do this? She's like losing her mind. And then like you start to hear the person in person and you realize it's Carlos prank calling her.
He rolls around the corner.
Yeah, so he got out of jail and they go and decide, well, he offhandedly mentions that it was like some Catholic like thing, I don't even know, charity, sorry guys, I have a cold, my brain's foggy, a Catholic like organization basically that helps get people out of prison or like help them to get parole, I guess.
Yeah, that's like he got paroled early.
Yeah,
like helped him out. Yeah,
he and Gabby go fuck a bunch, and after he needs a breather, she's like looking through his letters and there's like a fucking thick ass stack rubber banded from a sister Mary Bernard,
like too many letters. Also, who is this bitch? I would also be like, who is writing my man letters?
Like, but Gabby is just like, oh, it's a fucking nun, I guess. Like, they just kind of let it ride, and like she's like okay with it, but clearly like isn't really paying attention to his weird religious awakening. And then one day Carlos is like, okay, I'm going to mass, and she's like, it's some random day of the week.
It's like Wednesday or yeah something. It's not Sunday, that's for sure.
He's like, there's mass every day. She's like, since when? And he's like, well, Sister Mary Bernard's picking me up. And so Gabby, like, the horn honks, which is like my least favorite thing ever. Like, either text the person or get up and go. Like,
but don't honk your horn and call a bunch of attention. It makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, like that's super awkward. But she looks out the window and she sees this nun bent over doing something, and then she turns around. She's like not ugly, but she's not like,
she's not Gabby.
No, but she's a beautiful, it's because she's blonde. Blondes can get away with being uglier average. Because they're blonde.
And like, she's also wearing a really like devout outfit. Like, you can't see a single like speck of skin besides her face. So
I feel like we're like, this could totally be a porn parody getting started.
Yeah, like she, it's like an easy ripoff shirt, like,
yeah.
But it doesn't look it.
Yeah, so Carlos tries to like assure Gabby that's not a big deal, that they're just like, she's a nun for fuck's sake, and she's just helping him become more spiritual. So Gabby gets just as jealous as Carlos does, actually, which is kind of hilarious, seeing, like, the roles reversed.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
But she decides she's going to have Sister Mary over for lunch, so she could get to know her. And Sister Mary explains, like, what their ministry does and, like, how they help people and how they help, like, Carlos become more spiritual. And Carlos they kind of get to this, like, almost theological debate about just, like, being greedy and, like, materialism. And Carlos, like, Gabby makes a comment about his nice car, and he's like, fine, fuck it. And he's like, I'm gonna donate my nice-ass car to your charity. And Sister Mary's like, wait, what? And Gabby's like, what the fuck? What do you mean? He's like, well, we don't, like, we could share a car. It's not a big deal. And she's like, then Gabby's like, well, what if I want to go shopping? And he's like, well, we're not going to shop as much either, which is, like, hard line for Gabby. Not okay.
Also, Duna, like, don't be in a marriage where they're dictating, like, whether you can use your money. Like, I guess she's using his money because she doesn't work, but, like, telling you what you can and can't do. Like, you're going to do less of this. It's like, but I fucking want to do that. It's like, you lost your free will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Carlos decides, he's like, I'm going to go get the deed to my car. And Gabby's like, what the fuck? So she follows him upstairs. And she basically seduces him and starts, like, sucking his dick. And, like, he's like, the lady's downstairs. And she's like, no. So she seduces him and they fuck. And then Gabby comes downstairs all, like, disheveled in her little satin robe.
In a robe. She comes downstairs. I would be like,
Yeah. And she's like, we had a good lunch, but we're not giving you the car. You need to, like, back the fuck off. And Mary, Sister Mary is like, well, I think you guys should get an annulment. And Gabby's like, what kind of nun are you? Like, what the fuck? And, like, she basically says that she will, like, fuck her up if she tries to get between her and Carlos. And then Sister Mary just, like, goes into, like, this, like, long-ass spiel, basically, about how, like, Gabby is, like, the Antichrist to Carlos. Because, like, her affair is what caused him to have, like, jealous outbursts. And, like, her spending is why he, like, committed all those crimes. And she's like, so, actually, I'm going to snuff you out. And she fucking says it. Oh, and then she's like, fuck me up. I'm from the south side of Chicago. Like, let's go. Like, it's, like, the most, like, white girl. I was like, this is cringy a little bit. But
she's not threatening. I don't care where you're from.
But she does not break that sugar sweet smile the whole time.
Yeah, she says, you do not want to start a war with me. It's what Gabby says. And then Sister Mary Bernard says, I have God on my side, so bring it. And I was like, we never escape the religious references here.
No. Shit was wild. So Gabby's got a new foe. The tables have turned on the jealousy between Gabby and Carlos.
I liked the intro where Carlos is out of jail. I'm glad we don't have to keep visiting jail at this point. I'm not sure. I think Gabby can take this bitch. I think she can.
Yeah. It's just fun. I think it's going to set us up for kind of, like, fun things, I guess.
Hopefully. Yeah. I'm wondering if Carlos will actually fuck her.
We'll find out.
But Mary Alice Young takes us out. She says, it's not always easy to distinguish the good guys from the bad ones. Sinners can surprise you, and the same is true for saints. Why do we try to define people as simply good or simply evil? Because no one wants to admit that compassion and cruelty can live side by side in one heart, and that anyone is capable of anything. So... ooh, it was a good one. I felt like everything was very on theme with, like, good, bad, good versus evil, which we don't get often. Sometimes there's storylines that just don't make sense with the theme.
Yeah.
This really killed it for me. Mm-hmm. With that being said, we've arrived at Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Mm-hmm.
I can let you go first if you're ready.
Okay. I'm going to kill Susan because Brie already killed George, so we don't got to worry about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, we don't have to keep killing George. Great. We can kill other people.
Yeah, I'm going to kill Susan and her dad because they're both really fucking annoying. No, Susan just brings on a lot on herself, and, like, this episode was just peak, like, get the hint, move on. It sucks that your dad doesn't want to be a part of your life, but he doesn't. Move on. Like, just stop. Like, whatever you're doing, just stop.
Yeah.
Go get help, go to a therapist, like, I don't know, that storyline was just really weird, because it's not like she even knew, like, it'd be one thing if she always knew who he was and had been trying, but it's like, no, like, you just, like, you're 40-something, like, I don't know, it's just, like, a weird thing to kind of throw in. I would marry, man.
It's tough, this episode.
Probably Brie, because I love the way she just handled herself, like, she's a bad bitch. Like, I like the way she, like, handled the police, Dr. Goldfein, pieced things together. Like, I don't know. I need that person on my team. And then my fuck would be Gabby, Carlos, and Sister Mary Bernard, like, in a group setting.
And let's not forget that in a group setting.
Yeah.
Wait, I can't go. I was about to say something. I'm like, wait a minute. I can't go over that. Love it. Love the choices. I was going to say, let's not forget that Rex only died like 8 weeks ago as well. So she's handling this all very well while also grieving. So
yeah,
not forget this. Okay. I like your kill choice, but I think I'm going to have to agree with the kill choice. More specifically, okay. I'm going to kill Susan's dad just because he was so incredibly average and obviously has been a terrible person time and time again throughout his life, has an auxiliary families, has multiple love children, probably. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Susan learns that she's not the only one. So do I feel bad? No. I'm going to kill him because George is dead, and normally I would kill George, and we're done with that. No, we're killing George. So I think I'm going to marry Stu because he has a giant windfall coming his way of millions of dollars for his lawsuit against Lynette's firm.
Good choice.
I'm going to marry.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm going to choose to join the... I'm going to have a threesome, not with Sister Mary Bernard, but with Gabby and Carlos. And specifically right when he got out of jail, because I feel like that sex was probably insane.
Yeah, for sure.
Like when he rolled around the corner and was like, hey, baby. And
yeah.
Like, that's the one I want to join, so I choose to fuck them both in that scene.
Okay, great choice.
So, wow, I never thought I would want to fuck Carlos, but post-prison, maybe.
Well, I'm impressed.
That moves us on to Housewife of the Week.
Who do you want to nominate?
Random. Not part of the main cast, but I'm going to nominate Nina.
Because let's nominate Nina.
She was drinking
glass and wine.
She was drinking wine. I really liked her monologue where she's like, I used to be nice, and this job has driven me to not be nice, and good luck. And then I think she showed strong emotion about losing her job when we see her crying, which I never thought we'd see.
I weirdly felt bad for her.
I felt bad for her, so I'm gonna say Nina. She killed it, and we didn't see much of her, but what we did see, she was a showstopper.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Great choice.
So that's my choice. Yeah, I think we can agree on that. Mm-hmm. She hits some of the criteria. And finally, an Apple rating.
Okay, I have mine.
Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1.
4.5.
Okay. We are almost went 4.5, but I was like, if I gave the last one 4.75, I have to give it this one. Because this one was way better than last episode.
This one was great. No Apple Whites. I loved the ending of the George storyline, or somewhat ending. I don't know, because it's not, I guess. But I liked that. I liked the way that the storyline went, I guess, this episode. I liked, while Susan was crazy, it was fun to watch her be crazy. Lynette's storyline, I think we really got set up now for some great episodes coming down the pipeline with her story. And Carlos is out of jail. So all in all,
we made some progress, and I don't give a fuck about the Applewhites or Paul and Zach. This didn't leave me wanting.
Yeah, no.
It didn't leave me wondering. So I feel satisfied with the core women. We didn't even get an Edie Carl. I don't care. I loved this. I was like, all the women strongly sticking to the theme.
Yeah.
And we get the sides of good and evil and everybody. Bree handled everything like a boss. Gabby is ready to brawl with this nun, which I love that dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Lynette and Nina, the end of the road, I don't know, but we saw some finality there. And Susan was just herself, and we hate her, so can't complain.
Yeah. Did not veer off of our feelings on them.
Well, next week, we're 10 episodes in. This is flying by, actually.
It is. It's flying by pretty quick. We're almost getting to that midway point.
Yeah. I'm also wondering, maybe we should have a segment, if we hear any Desperate Housewives news. Not about Desperate Housewives, but perhaps about... any of the actors, mm-hmm. any sort of like related to Desperate Housewives things.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have any, but we're going to start maybe trying to touch on that a bit more. That'd be cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I'm personally wondering, and I think I'm going to look this up, where is Nina? I haven't seen her in anything since.
Google her.
This is the first time I've seen her and also the last, but I felt like she was a strong actress.
She's been in stuff. She was in an Inspector Gadget.
She's been in things. Don't you remember Inspector Gadget? like a very underrated movie.
Yeah, that's all I got for you.
But that's all since Desperate Housewives? Nothing?
Oh, I meant like big things.
Oh.
Big things? Anything worth noting?
I don't know.
Not really.
That's sad. I felt that like is she, sad. Maybe she was a nightmare to work with, or maybe she's, I don't know.
No, she's just a woman and aged, and that's kind of what happens, unless you're Meryl Streep.
Yeah, it's tough out there. I'd love to see her on some Law and Order, but yeah. I feel like she must have been, but...
She, probably at some point. Everybody has been.
All right. Well, if you guys know about any Desperate Housewives news, hit us up.
Definitely hit us up.
But you can reach us on our Instagram. That's pretty popular. We have an email, And we also have a website. We have a Twitter. Anywhere, just Desperate Pod is usually the way to go.
Yep.
And we post every week a couple different things, usually some tweets, usually just something else, some Desperate Housewives stuff that we hope you enjoy. So you can follow us there. You can share us, follow us on any of the other platforms. Mm-hmm. Like, follow, share, the usual.
Yeah.
And yeah, other than that, we're here every Monday. We drop a new episode. We are always open to feedback, so if you have any for us, reach out to us. And yeah, we leave you with some words of wisdom every week to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.